Back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, September 9th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today, where we chose primary day to look at a recent New York Times breakdown of voting trends between Democrats and Republicans with some troubling numbers for the Democratic Party. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by with her weekly update. She chatted about some controversial remarks from a state legislator regarding Connecticut residents who choose not to attend college. University of New Haven Associate Professor of Accounting, Finance, and Taxation, Dr. Jim Mose, dropped by to talk about the nation's economy, including some controversy over tariffs and job numbers. And CBS News reporter Aaron Navarro joined us live from Washington with the latest on ICE deportations and more possible expanded enforcement. So one of the greatest sports coaches, NFL coaches for that matter, of all time, a guy named Bill Parcells, Super Bowl winning coach, of course, with the New York Giants, very successful also with the New England Patriots, the New York Jets, yes, even the Jets, got to an AFC title game, the Dallas Cowboys. Bill Parcells said one of the things he is credited anyway for saying it. I'm sure other coaches have said it to some extent or another. But Mr. Parcells has always said something, and he said it once to a reporter, and his news conferences were legendary. They still are when he talks to the media. But Bill Parcells now, who I think is in his 80s, you see him pop up every so often. Bill Parcells famously told a reporter during one of his coaching stints, and the reporter tried to say, well, you're playing this team, and if this had happened, and if that had happened. And Mr. Parcells, the big tune as he's known, Bill Parcells always said something to the effect of, you are what your record says you are. And he went on, he was elaborating, don't give me that coulda, woulda, shoulda, and if we scored here, and if we just kept him out of the end zone there. No. Bill Parcells said, you are what your record says you are. And my God, whether it's in somebody's professional life, whether it's in their social life, whether it's in their sports life, whether it's in their political life, whether it's in their mental condition life, or whatever it is, it's true. You are essentially what your record says you are. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. But it means that you've got to look at your record or where you are and where you came from and where you want to go. And you have to look at that record with a cold, kind of detached reality. Don't be subjective about it. Be objective. You're supposed to be objective when you judge yourself or the people around you or whatever you're trying to judge. Now, sometimes that's not easy. Sometimes we have everything, all the slop between our ears wants to get in the way of that, so it's hard. Sometimes, to be totally objective, we need, what, an intervention, what they call, half-kiddingly, a come-to-Jesus moment. And I've talked to people who've been in recovery from various addictions, drugs, alcohol, gambling, whatever, and they say, yeah, an intervention finally got me to where I am. So what am I talking about here? Well, pretty serious here. If you're an anti-Trump person, now I have a lot of, and generally an anti-Republican person, whatever. Generally, I have a lot of friends that were still civil to each other because in the end, politics shouldn't make or break a friendship. Because in the end, it doesn't matter, I always say, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. Here's the bottom line. We're all going to die. Nobody's going to get out of here free. We have no immortality. So we have to be honest with each other and honest with ourselves. The reason I bring this up today is I'm wondering if one of the major parties in this country needs an intervention, if they are not realizing that they currently are what their record says they are. Now, I have a lot of friends, a lot of family members, a lot of professional members who kid me, a lot of you folks who call this radio station and say, well, and have called me over the years, well, you know, this is not your father's Republican Party anymore, and my God, what has happened? Well, okay, yeah. And a whole bunch of Republicans are like, yeah, well, this is, you know, you may not like Trump, but the vast majority of us, meaning Republicans, voted for the guy three times, he won two of the three times. So maybe the problem is with the other side. This story here from the Miami Herald. And listen closely if you're a Trump hater. If you think everything wrong with the world right now is of, by, and for Donald Trump, it's not. Part of it's with your side of the aisle. Democratic Party leaders are now expressing concern over a significant decline in voter registrations. A New York Times report recently revealing that Democrats have lost ground in all 30 states, or in 30 states, I should say, since the 2020 elections. Now, get this. And this is going to be our little intervention today. I'm going to ask you about this. And I'd love to hear from you, especially if you're a Trump hater. Now, if you're a Trump fan or kind of 50-50, you are obviously invited to join our little foray today at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, talk or text. Republicans have gained reportedly about 4 million voters since the 2020 elections. Now, why is this happening? Strategists are warning that the Democratic Party is struggling to connect with working class communities and risks further alienation if it does not address the concerns. Some analysts arguing, it says here, the Democrats can only recover by improving their branding and presenting a clear alternative vision to voters. There is a warning now that the modern-day Democratic Party risks alienation from diverse voter groups if it does not address perceptions of disconnection from working-class communities. Strategists argue that Democrats can only recover by offering a compelling alternative to Republicans. But I ask my friends out there on the Democratic side of the aisle, and you folks in general, what is the alternative? We still coming up on 8 months into Trump 2.0. We still don't know. But now we know here in Connecticut what the Democrats stand for. Clamping down on ICE and making it expensive as hell to live here and not giving businesses a break. So we know what's happening here in Connecticut. What is happening nationally? What is the, you tell me, especially if you're a Democrat, what is the compelling argument the Democrats can make besides away from we're not Trump? Okay, you can make that argument. That's fine. What are your ideas? Have we heard anything from the Democratic Party on border security? Have we heard anything on immigration? Well, a path to citizenship, that's not what we're talking about here. Border security, crime. Oh, my God. Do they realize how much they are shooting themselves in the foot on crime? They realize that? Now you know what's in the spotlight after the killing of that Ukrainian refugee, that woman in Charlotte? Oh, you know what's in the spotlight now? No cash bail. How do the Dems feel on no cash bail? You know that psycho that killed that woman? He was out on no cash bail. An admitted psycho was out there. And you wonder why your side is losing voters and registered party members? Maybe it's not all about the economy. Maybe it's about common sense. We'll do traffic and weather together, and I will come back and ask you, seriously, what is the alternative vision? Why have millions of folks left the Democratic Party? As the great Bill Parcells used to say, and continues to say, I'm sure if you asked him, that great phrase, you are what your record says you are. And right now, according to a recent New York Times analysis, which is getting picked up now all across the country, there has been a swing of about 4 to 4.5 million registrations now. Now, this is not necessarily votes per se, but registrations. Democrats v. Republicans. Republicans have seen over the past 4 or 5 years a counterbalance or a counter swing of about 4.5 million votes as opposed to Democrats here, according to the New York Times, hardly a right-wing outlet, in party registration here. And the New York Times did a deep dive into this, and they found a number of things. And I just saw this, and I'm wondering, like, why, if the Republicans are so unctuous and odious, and if Trump is an ogre, and if he's a fascist, and if he's a militant, and he wants martial law, why are the Democrats doing so bad? Seriously. Says right here, I'm taking this right out of the New York Times, 5 major takeaways from a Times analysis of Democratic decline in voter registration. Number one, Democrats are losing ground with new voters. Number two, battleground states are swinging to the right. Number three, the gender gap is a growing problem for Democrats. That means they're losing a lot more men. Women tend to be centrist or center left. Number four, younger voters are going for the GOP. Number five, it's not getting any better yet for Democrats. So you tell me, honestly, are there a lot of people that call here? You know who you are. Explain it to me, because as Bill Parcells would say, if he was sitting in front of a bank of microphones right now, he would say, I don't want to hear all this about fascism and military dictatorship. Look at our record. Look at your record. You are who you are. You are what your record says you are. Explain this to me, please. And no, this is not from Fox News. It's not from One America News. It's not from the Heritage Foundation. It's not from the Federalist Society. It's not from Newsmax. It's the New York Times. Last time I checked, I don't quite recall the New York Times being some right-wing outlet. And again, all you folks here in Connecticut, from Governor Lamont on down to Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz and, Mr. Lawsuit of the Day, William Tong, the Attorney General, everything, oh my God, Trump is... Well, apparently, to millions of voters, and the guy is not the be-all, end-all, and evil. But I'm asking you to take a look at it, not from the Trump point of view, but from the other side. Because if it stands to reason, I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but you sound like it, Paul. No, but seriously, if you get out of the bubble of what is Connecticut and the Northeast and Massachusetts and New York and Rhode Island and Vermont and New Hampshire, and then you get into middle America and the southern part of the U.S., it's a big difference here. And I'm not saying one side's wrong or the other side's wrong or right, but how long is it going to be before people open their eyes here? And I mentioned so many of these stories on the show. Hey, look at this. This strategist says, hey, the messaging isn't working, or the messaging on crime isn't working, and Trump's hammering the Democrats on the border and illegals. All right, then what? Hello, is this thing on? What? Is anybody going to change it? Or are they just going to get out there and yap about free Palestine? Is that what we're going to get? Is that going to change things? Bernie Sanders going on tour with AOC. That and Zohran Mamdani in New York, that's going to change things? I don't get it. I don't quite understand it. And I'm asking you folks who may disagree with me on politics a lot, and you know I love you, so what's your answer? If the current crop in D.C. is so bad, and Lord knows some of the stuff they do and say, I sit here and I roll my eyes and say, oh my God. But apparently more people will take that than they will the other side. Explain it to me, please. Explain to me, Lucy. And please, I want to hear from you folks who call up and criticize me and say, oh, this is that, and oh, my God, and fascism and dictatorship and the military in the streets and he hates black people. Hi. Maybe so. So you tell me, what's the answer from your side? All right, and one of the great voices we like to hear right here on the Voice of Connecticut is the voice of the one and the only Megan Portfolio, who writes the Hartford Portfolio blog. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
Holy cow, what an intro.
Well,
hopefully I can live up to that.
Well, you know, I try to keep it fresh. They tell us in the radio business, you know, every break, keep it fresh. Make sure there's people listening for the first time. So how are you?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
I'm doing okay. All things, you know, when I get out of bed in the morning, all my limbs work and I know where I am and the room isn't spinning. So that's all good. It's all good.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy that you're happy, Paul.
Well, so am I, Megan, and I'm happy that you're happy that I'm happy. Hey, we had a member of the General Assembly say something. Really? And by the way, no offense, I don't think I've ever heard of this member of the General Assembly, but who is she? Where is she? Oh, I see where she's from. Okay.
She's from Avon.
And no offense, love me some Avon people. But what did she say about non-degree workers here? That's interesting.
Well, you're a burden on the state.
What does that mean now? Please explain.
Oh, sorry. So I don't get accused of taking her quote out of context.
Okay.
She said, let's see. If folks aren't going to college and getting the jobs that, you know, college educations fill, what jobs are they going to end up in? They're ending up in jobs that do not pay them enough, and they will become, quote unquote, a burden on everyone else because of the services they might need.
Oh.
And then she listed the services like SNAP and Medicaid and housing vouchers.
Yeah. So
you know, all those tradespeople.
Yeah.
You know, small business owners, if you didn't have a degree, apparently were burdens.
I don't know, because you probably were. You weren't there, right? Or did you watch this?
It was on CTN.
Okay, so was there...
So let me set the stage.
Yeah,
So in Connecticut, we have about 518,000 people that have student loan.
Okay.
It's about 14% of our population, and the average amount of that loan is like $38,000, $39,000.
Okay.
And that's nothing to like sneer at. I mean, that's a serious thing. And there is an issue with these student loans and the interest people have to pay. Sometimes they're just paying and paying because of the interest.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a problem, and I'm not trying to say there's not a problem. So they have this working group to address it. But instead of like, you know, let's fixing why we have a problem with these costs and why there's an issues with all these loans, this woman's literally saying, like, we need to all get 4-year degrees or we can't, you know, get good paying jobs. But that's ludicrous because not even half of our state has a college degree. There are many jobs that you don't need a college degree for. There are many college degrees that when you get out, they really aren't worth much.
Has she talked to anybody who does HVAC, HVAC, or any electricians or plumbers? These people are working all the time.
Yeah, and one of the perks that our General Assembly, you know, came up with to solve the problem is to just like start erasing the debt. And the way they do it is there's a program. You have to go to a state school. You have to live in the state and you can get up to $20,000 in loan relief.
Okay.
So it's like, you're putting these band-aids on things. You have not fixed anything. I was literally looking at a spreadsheet this morning of pensions. And you should see the higher ed pensions that these people get. And I'm not talking about the old school tier one, because there are many, many people that are getting $30,000, $20,000
a month in
pension. I mean, that's not the norm anymore, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still, I'm looking at it, $7,000 a month.
Yeah, nice.
And this is for life.
Yeah.
It's not like my 401k, which once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So we don't want to talk about that kind of stuff.
Man, and this hearing was what again, please? I'm still gobsmacked at this. What were they supposedly discussing?
It's one of the many working groups that we have in the state, and this one is the Relief for Connecticut Borrowers Working Group.
Working groups, huh? Working groups.
I mean, working groups, sometimes, you know, things happen that are good that come out of these working groups.
Yeah.
Other times, it's literally a waste of my time watching it and their time being there.
And usually with these, and Megan Portfolio, of course, our every Tuesday guest here in the slot from the Yankee Institute, usually these working group meetings are not really well attended. Was this one? Was there anybody there? Is this just to get it on the record?
There was half of them were in the room of the lawmakers and the different experts. There was an ombudsman for the student loans.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were some other people on Zoom. It didn't appear there was a lot of people in the actual quote-unquote audience. Mm. Because, I mean, it's off session, so that you don't see a lot of people at the LOB anyway. So that's not a real indicator. Because we all know we can watch it on CTN, because CTN's the best.
But I think, yes, they are. We love them. But you know what I think you should start doing, Megan? If for nothing more than to make our chats more exciting, you should attend these things in person. How much fun would you have?
Oh, man, that means I'm going to have to put on big girl clothes and not work in my sweatpants.
Hell, I do the show half the time of the year.
Don't tell my boss, because I do have, like, the nice collared shirt from the waist up on my Zooms.
Yeah. Oh, you're one of those, huh? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I take the baseball hat off and put my hair up.
Very nice, yeah. But I will tell you, about half the time of the year, and my producer Chris will attest to this, yes, nothing wrong with sweatpants. It's radio. We walk around in sweatpants all day, most of us, you know?
Oh, who's got a better life than you?
Oh my God! So listen, before we let you go, have you heard anything poking around? I know you get a lot of email and text from people. Now they're like sounding like this special session for housing like might not happen. Like what are we hearing here?
I've been hearing that we're probably looking at October around Halloween, which I'm a little annoyed with.
I know.
My favorite holiday.
Oh,
that's
my God. That's your favorite day of the year. It's your favorite day of the year.
It's for reals. And it was like, let the Christmas people have to suffer. Why do you got to ruin it for us Halloween people?
So we're talking end of October.
Yeah. So they are talking. There are still rumors circulating. Housing would be on it. Immigration, and then obviously the federal cuts. This is just me thinking. This is not based on any facts.
Yeah.
But I'm like very nervous that they're going to come out with one of their versions of a one big beautiful bill. But it won't be so beautiful.
And of course, we'll crank up the Trust Act even more.
Yeah, well, you know how they do it. They're like, we really want the housing thing, so we're going to put all this other stuff in there that, you know, our side of the aisle is forced to vote on because they can't go back to their constituents and say they voted no on it. So you know how that works.
Man. Yeah.
And, of course, you know, they're talking about it. And I heard Governor Lamont mention there is some kind of bill floating around. It's not finalized, but I'm going to be very interested as to when the public gets to see this, since this affects every community. Like, are they going to drop this bill the day before the session starts, you know, 12 hours before it starts? Or are they going to, like, drop it and give us, you know, 72 hours to look at it, a week to look at it, so we can really digest it? Because these special session bills often are very long, and it takes a long time to digest all of that information, especially if you're going to lump everything into one bill.
And what's to stop them? You know how there are these rats in the budget bill, right, in the implementer? What's to stop them from putting rats in the housing bill?
I mean, they're the lawmakers, so, I mean, they would have to stop themselves.
Oh, man. All right, before I let you go, how's the dog?
Oh, he's staring at me with a Freddy Krueger doll through the window, being a good boy.
He
has a Freddy Krueger, a Jason, and a Chucky doll. He likes Halloween as
well. Wait a minute. Your dog has Freddy Krueger, Jason, and who else?
Chucky. He likes the classics from the 80s.
Okay. Here she is, folks. You know where you love her, Megan Portfolio. But seriously, check out all her columns at the Hartford Portfolio, YankeeInstitute.org. Megan, thank you. Tell the dog I said hi, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul. Bye.
Appreciate it. Right there. Megan Portfolio there. Man, oh man, job numbers, adjustments, taxes, tariffs, spending. Now if the U.S. has to roll back these tariffs, could be $1 trillion. What in the world is going on? One of our go-to guys, Dr. Jim Mose, University of New Haven, Associate Professor of Accounting, Finance, and Taxation. Dr. Mose, hey, Jim, it's Paul. How are you this afternoon? How you been?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, but please make it, Jim, make this all make sense. What are we seeing here with the tax rulings, the tariff rulings, the job adjustments here? Is it worry time, Jim, or not? Break some of this down for us.
Yeah, I don't think it's really worry time right now. What we have is a lot of political actions going on. When we look at the tariffs, yeah, we had an appeals court say, no, you have to roll them back. Mm-hmm. Now, you know that's going to go to the Supreme Court. And if they aren't allowed under that, they're going to be allowed under two or three other sections, which gives the president the authority to do it. So it's a lot of grandstanding, I think.
Mm-hmm.
More concern to me right now is the bad numbers that we're getting.
Okay,
out of Washington.
Yep, explain that, please. Yep.
All right. I mean, right now we're still trying to digest a lot of the numbers. There's been so many changes. Constant revisions are very concerning to the markets.
Yeah.
Which I'll also slide into in a minute.
But, sure.
Because why? Bad data forms the basis for bad decisions.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. Yes, these revisions are indicating to us that the labor market has cooled. Okay. It's cooled, but it hasn't been decimated. It's pulled. The broader measures still remain relatively constant. Some economists are saying, well, no, these labor revisions are signs of recession. I don't really see it. Not in the short horizon.
Yeah.
So what does that mean to us? Well, it means to us that there's a mess down at the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Yeah.
That's why Erica was fired.
Yeah.
And I think he had the right to do that. But I mean, if you look at it, every month there is a revision, material revision, material meaning significant.
Mm.
Right now, the year on year is what, some 900 jobs?
It's like down. It's like a million or some 900 grand, yeah. How is that possible, yeah. Jim?
900,000 is what I was looking at.
Yeah.
That's the cumulative effect year over year. Okay. So that's 2024 to 2025, March to March. Okay. Year on year. How do they do that? A lot of this may have been political.
Hmm.
You just don't know. What they need to do, I heard a blurb from the White House press secretary that, yeah, it's a mess and we have to straighten it out. So I think they're trying to straighten it out. Because why? Bad decisions are being made. Now, let me just say one other thing about
sure,
this.
Sure.
Sometimes bad news like this is good news. And sometimes bad news like this is just bad news. It could be good news because of rate reductions, and that may all end up in people's pockets with reduced interest rates. It could be bad news because the Treasury yields are going to be cut, and that could hurt investors and the rate of return on their government bonds. So bad news can be good news, or it can be bad news depending upon how you look at it.
Dr. Jim Mose is the guest from the University of New Haven. Now, Jim, you mentioned something I wanted to get in here, the rates. Now, it's no secret here that the president has very angrily said that, you know, he wants interest rates cut by the Fed. The Fed doesn't want to do it yet. They're being very cautious. They say no, because that could overheat the economy and make money too cheap here. So this is a real point of contention with the White House here, right? The lending rates.
Absolutely. Because that's a cost to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's contentious. To me, it looks like it's just political. Both parties are digging their heels in the sand. But Jerome Powell has softened a little bit on his tones. I mean, we're all looking at this, and the market is kind of baked in a couple of rate cuts for the remainder of the year.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't know is how much they're going to be. I did a piece for a competition a while ago.
Yeah.
And when I looked at the analysis, I'm saying, okay, we could be anywhere from two 25 basis point cuts. That's a quarter of a percent per
quarter percent. Two, yeah.
Yeah. To 50 basis point cuts, which is half a percent.
Wow.
We don't know. You know why we don't know? Because everybody's still trying to digest the data. The markets, right? It's changing constantly. I mean, the tariff thing is up in the air as well. That's changing constantly.
Yeah.
The lawfare that's going on is just muddying up the waters.
Jim,
go ahead.
You know, I was just going to say, Dr. Jim Moe's the guest from University of New Haven. Jim, I saw somebody, I forgot who it was something I read or saw on TV maybe about a week ago. And and they wondered, and kind of what you had said a few seconds ago about bad data could make bad policy. There was a contention by somebody that said, you know, it's almost like the baseball purists, Jim, argue, it's too many numbers now. There's nothing done with a gut feeling. There's on-base percentage, there's OPS, there's batting average, there's batting average on balls in play. Is that happening too much with the economy, Jim? With all the data we have and all these websites, is there too much info out there or not?
In my opinion, yeah, because we're saturated with data. We're saturated with data that keeps changing. Hard to make any decisions on that. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely correct. I agree with you 100%.
So now what happens, Jim? We're heading into another week here, and we have this huge, as you say, could be up to a 900,000 revision of the job numbers. Ooh. There are some people saying, hey, we shouldn't do the job numbers. Whoever gets a job, and whoever doesn't. What's the path forward here, you think, especially heading into the midterms?
Yeah. Keep in mind that the jobs numbers also feeds into a very important metric that's on everybody's mind, and that's the unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the jobs available versus the unemployed, that comes up with your unemployment percentage, which is very concerning to a lot of people, which is an indication of purchasing power and a lot of other things. So everything kind of spins off of everything. But there's too many data points. I'm telling you, saturation is just out of control.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at the markets, and that drives a lot of it too. I mean, the markets are going up. We had a triple peak today.
Wow.
Which is the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ all hit all-time highs. So what's happening? Well, the market doesn't like inconsistency. It doesn't like confusion. It doesn't like volatility. So what's happening? People are moving their investments. You also notice that gold and silver are pretty much at all-time highs, too.
Mm.
That's a stable fallback, right? The hedge. That's going up. People are putting they're going out of the bonds into that, out of the bonds into the stocks.
Wow.
Out of the bonds because they're anticipating rate cuts, which is going to reduce their income off of those bonds. And since the market is going great gangbusters, they're making either appreciation or dividends higher than they would have on the fixed income from the bonds.
Mm.
So the money's going into two different places. Gold and silver and commodities, much more conservative than the market.
And all that data out there, too, to look at and to get our eyes to glaze over. Thanks to Dr. Jim Moe's, University of New Haven, Associate Professor of Accounting, Finance, Taxation, and all the other data points out there. Jim, once again, good to have you on, and we'll keep in touch. Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Paul. You take care.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. So there you go. All right, now, part of the reason there's such vitriol over what Mr. Trump is doing has to do with immigration enforcement, ICE, using National Guard troops to try and clamp down on some crime. What are the next moves there? Our buddy, our pal, Aaron Navarro, CBS News, live in D.C. Aaron, good afternoon. Never a dull day, Aaron, huh, where you are?
Paul, never a dull minute in the White House these days.
The coffee machines are chugging along. All right, Aaron, what are you guys and gals hearing down there in the press corps? Chicago, New Orleans, the Guard going in there, more ICE agents in Chicago. This seems to shift, Aaron, every day. What's the latest?
Yeah, the latest seems to be this immigration enforcement expansion, let's say, in Chicago, which they have called, the Department of Homeland Security has called, quote, Operation Midway Blitz. That name is in honor of a woman who was killed in a drunk driving accident in Illinois by an undocumented migrant.
Mm-hmm.
What we're hearing from the, quote, border czar Tom Homan is that they are now seeing more resources in Chicago, more boots on the ground in terms of immigration enforcement. Homan said that they are still prioritizing public safety threats and national security threats. They're not doing grand sweeps of neighborhoods, but we'll see what happens this week as we're starting to see images of more immigration enforcement officers in Chicago on the ground today.
All right, so that's ICE. Now, anything in other cities, Aaron, regarding what I guess is still going on in D.C.? And you told me you've seen some National Guard folks. Any further expansion of that might we see?
Yeah, not yet in terms of more National Guard in D.C. We did see a development in Los Angeles yesterday where the U.S. Supreme Court essentially said that the immigration-related stops that you saw enforcement officers there can continue. There was a federal district judge that claimed that they discriminated based on ethnicity. The Supreme Court argued or cited against that. And President Trump said that was, quote, a great decision. They will continue their immigration operations in Los Angeles and specifically targeting people who may have things such as MS-13 tattoos, things that kind of fall into that broad, reasonable suspicion allowed under the Fourth Amendment.
All right, Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Aaron, as always, thank you. Stay safe, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, appreciate it. There you go.